her money, grabs her backpack, hops a jet plane, heads to France, grows a garden, writes a screenplay, and she's learning.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to KDRT LP 95.7 FM. This is Corinne Motokaitis, host of How She Really Does It, where inspiration and possibility meet. I continue my search for answers to improve our lives from people who have spent their lives learning, growing, and understanding. And on How She Really Does It, I bring guests onto the show to really dive into issues to help inform, inspire, and empower you towards a better life. I'd love to hear our listeners' comments about our shows or questions for upcoming guests. You can email me by going to my website at www.howshereallydoesit.com to send me an email. You can also find my Facebook and Twitter links as well as sign up for our weekly newsletter on our website right there. Past shows are available on our website or as podcasts from iTunes. Amy Lewis is our guest today, and she traded in her six-figure salary as the youngest member of Howard University executive team to become an acupuncturist 10 years ago. And as a single mother with responsibilities, her epiphany had to be realistic to support herself and her son. Why walk away, and how did she have the guts to do it? Amy's here to let us all know. Amy, hello and welcome.
Hi, Corinne. Thanks so much for having me on your show today.
Thank you, and thanks for talking about the truth about taking the leap and entrepreneurship.
Sure.
You know, and I had found you, I believe it was in the USA Today article a couple months ago, and Ariane de Bonvoisin, who's a friend of mine and has been a guest, and also Michelle Woodward, who's another friend of mine and has been a guest, were both in that article, and there was your story. And I was so compelled because it was you, you know, you were in the trenches, and you're also a single mother, so it wasn't that you could take on being an acupuncturist as a hobby. This is something you had to do to provide for yourself and your child.
Well, that's right. And, you know, making that leap was huge for us because I really didn't at the time have anybody else to rely on. And my son relied on me solely. So it was a big leap. And yet it was something that really served me and served my son in the end.
First off, why would you leave a six-figure job?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I came from a long line of achievers. I was put on, you know, a particular career path probably when I was 3 years old. You know, I was a pusher, and my family was as well. I had a business at 19 years old. You know, I kind of followed my somewhat blind ambition And was, you know, in many of my positions, the youngest or, you know, the most ambitious one in the group. And I was kind of leapfrogging in my career. I was fundraising. I was pretty good at it. And as you probably can imagine, there was a huge need for it. But I was miserable. I was really stressed. I was surviving on, you know, my friends used to say I was surviving on coffee and peanut M&Ms. And I chose the peanut ones because they had some protein in them. But that was the only way to, you know, to get around what I was doing. But my body was screaming at me to pay attention. I had, you know, it started out with, you know, back pain, and it got worse and worse and worse. And enough that, you know, the doctors were suggesting surgery. And I wasn't listening to my own inner voice. So my body was, you know, going to make me listen.
Uh-huh. And you're a healer now, so you understand the correlation between our bodies and, you know, giving us information. Because a lot of times, I think, especially in our culture, don't we just go, oh, I just need to deal with this, or I need to take some medicine to deal with this, and I'll be okay.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our bodies are really wise, and they never give us a symptom for no reason. You know, people think, oh, you know, my head hurts. But it really has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that, you know, I've been stressed for 3 weeks and haven't slept and haven't eaten well. So, you know, we just have to really figure out what our body's trying to tell us. It's like a check engine light in your car. You know, the check engine light comes on, and most of us take a big piece of duct tape and stick it over the check engine light, you know, like an aspirin or something like that. It turns off the signal. We drive down the road, you know, a few more hundred miles, and then the car blows up, and we go, well, wait a second, I didn't know that there was a problem. But we did, we just didn't pay attention.
So it's not just this woo-woo thing, there's a lot of truth to it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And so how did you decide to be an acupuncturist?
Well, you know, it was funny at the time because I was a colleague of mine at the university. I was talking about, you know, crawling into work one day, and she said, well, I do acupuncture. And I think I really said some kind of pejorative response about, you know, an acupuncturist being a voodoo doctor.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was really not familiar nor interested in kind of complementary medicine at that time. And she said, wait a second, you're going to let somebody cut into you, but you're not willing to try acupuncture to see if it helps. You don't have anything to lose at this point. And, you know, she made a point, and I went to an acupuncturist. And although, you know, now that I'm an acupuncturist, I can say it doesn't really work this way all the time. I've seen it happen sometimes this way. But I walked into my practitioner's office in excruciating pain, and I walked out pain-free.
Uh-huh.
And as a healthy skeptic, I couldn't explain it. So that's sort of how I began my interest in acupuncture.
And then to make a career out of it?
Well, the more interested I got in acupuncture and the more I looked at it and the more it was helping me not only, you know, not only help my back, but, you know, it really had a mind, body, and spirit component to it. I was, you know, finding my own voice and recognizing that, you know, that my back pain was really trying to teach me something about not being in integrity with myself. And, you know, at the university where I was working at the time, you know, I also looked around me and I was able to observe firsthand what happens to an institution when, you know, some of the people steering the ship are out of their own integrity. The collective really suffers when the individual is suffering. And, you know, I'm in the D.C. area, and as you know, I mean, there's many, many people making huge decisions about our government, our laws, our medicine. And I wanted to help in that regard. So what moved me towards acupuncture was really helping those folks, bring those folks back to their real truth, their own integrity,
mm-hmm.
so that if they as individuals were healthy in mind, body, and spirit, they then could go and be part of a collective that was healthier.
And is that a difficult, because it sounds like, you know, and I'm a life coach, so I put myself in this with this healers area, but kind of more woo-woo, and then you're dealing with people who are more institutional going, well, how do you know? Because in the institutional world, it's like, just suck it up, get it done, move forward.
Right.
Right? And then it's like, on this side, the work that you and I both do is about getting in touch with our bodies and our souls and being really honest with ourselves. And those two worlds seem to be a little bit separate. Tell me where I'm wrong.
You know, I don't find that they're all that separate. What mm-hmm. I find, you know, somebody walks in my office and they come in recommended by somebody else and they have back pain or they have knee pain or they have, you know, migraines. And what I find is that I'm a little bit of a wolf in sheep's clothing. I mean, I came from the corporate sector, so I speak some of the same language. I didn't come much more from a woo-woo perspective.
Uh-huh.
And some of the healers do come from that, and I think it's wonderful. They have a different perspective. But because we work first on their knee pain, on their back pain, on their headaches, and we have some success there, they're more likely to begin to open themselves in a different way. When we can say, you know, your back pain, have you observed that you get a backache every time you come out of a meeting with your boss? Or you get multiple migraines in the weeks that you go, you know, to these big board meetings. And getting people to just observe.
Mm-hmm.
Observe their bodies and what their bodies are trying to tell them. They realize, oh, wait a second, my back pain is connected. And as they begin to heal themselves and look to what they want to do, I have a patient who I'm incredibly proud of who worked for a huge media outlet. And she just walked away from that position to open her own media company because she had had enough. And it was getting her to get to the place where she could then say, oh, you know, I'm really not in integrity with myself. My passion lies somewhere else. And setting aside that ambition or setting aside what we think we're supposed to do, particularly as women, you know, is very difficult, and it takes, you know, the courageous few willing to do it, but those are the movers and shakers, and those are the folks that I'm interested in then having them go back into, you know, the government or law or medicine or those kinds of things and really be a mover and a shaker in their respective areas.
Because they're more in tune with themselves?
They're more in tune with themselves.
And then they can really help others.
That's exactly right.
It's like the whole pitcher thing, right? Their pitcher is now full so they can really pour water into others' cups.
Well, yes. And, you know, each time somebody, we know this from lots of research, but each time one individual enters a group, the entire group changes. The dynamics of that group change. So if you have a very healthy mind, body, and spirit individual re-enter that group, by definition, that entire group changes.
Interesting. This is Corinne Motokaitis, and my guest today is Amy Lewis of Experience Health and Wellness in Washington, D.C., and she's here with us to talk about her making the leap into entrepreneurship. And so, Amy, when you originally decided to make this change, didn't you have mentors who believed that you were doing career suicide?
I don't, most people thought I was committing career suicide. I had a mentor that had helped me really form my path, both as a private consultant and in fundraising for higher education. And she said, you know, what are you thinking? You'll never get, you know, you'll never get a job if you just up and leave. And, you know, I knew, and family as well, who are much more conservative than I am, and said, you know, you are a single mom. You are doing it's a misservice to your son to, you know, take away his security. And that was that was probably an even bigger pull because, you know, I had, you know, my brother who I love him to death, but he's much more conservative, and he said, you know, you're taking away your son's opportunity to go to a good college because you won't have the money to and the resources to pay for it. And you know, my sister was a little less, a little less obvious in her concern about me, but she certainly raised an eyebrow or two when I told them what I wanted to do.
And how old was your son at the time?
My son was about, I think he was four or five at the time.
Okay.
So he was little.
And so all of those concerns, did they ring true or did they become true?
What I knew that I had to do was I had to change my lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I made pretty good money when I was in higher education.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a nanny, and I owned a home, and had, you know, a lot of opportunity to take vacations and eat at nice restaurants and, you know, could buy my son big toys. And that all shifted. And I actually moved into a pretty small apartment in a not-so-great neighborhood. And my son and I went to the library a lot because, you know, I couldn't buy him the books from the bookstore. And we would actually, we'd go to the toy store and play with the toys at the toy store, and then we would leave. And he didn't really see much different. We had a lot more quality time together. So on one hand, no, I couldn't take him on these wonderful vacations for a few years. But on the other hand, he got more mommy.
Mm-hmm. And so were you okay with that, making that change? Because that's so the antithesis of, you know, the American dream. And then especially for somebody who, as you said, was a high achiever and always like one of the younger people to overachieve.
I think in the beginning, to be honest, I felt a little embarrassed that I couldn't afford the things that I used to be able to afford. So I do remember, you know, some vague embarrassment, you know, when my friends would, you know, oh, let's go here, or do you want to go shopping? And I had to decline.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't last very long because I realized, I mean, I really loved spending more time with my son.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we got probably, you know, every weekend, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week together. And during the week, we had more time. And I had, you know, I went to work part-time. I was a personal trainer. You know, I had taken, in college, I had been, you know, a certified personal trainer and aerobics instructor, so I recertified and picked that back up again. I hadn't done that in years. There was, I even worked at a retail operation during Christmas time 1 year so that I could afford to buy my son some toys at a discount at that particular store. So, you know, there was a lot of shifting that had to occur. And I think probably there were momentary times where I was like, oh, I want a better car or, you know, a nicer place, a little bit safer perhaps. But overall, it really worked out for us.
And then, so have you been able to get back kind of on track to where you once were?
Probably better than I was. I really set a path for myself, and I set some very clear goals for myself, and really focused this not only from the healing perspective, but really it's important as a healer to have a business plan. And I think many healers, they are so focused on the healing side that they forget that they have to survive too. And I've gone from making a really good salary in the corporate world to making a really, really good salary as a healer. So I'm actually on the back end doing better than I did on the front end.
And that's always inspirational news for other people, that it is possible. You don't have to ditch the corporate or the institution and then and follow your dreams and then be poor.
Well, that's right. And I don't advocate being poor ever.
And so what were some of the things that you put into your business plan?
Well, I did some corny things, and I did some, I'd taken a lot of, you know, those healthy selfie books, and I've read quite a few of them. And, they were really good, suggestions that, you know, and I picked and, you know, picked from each one. For example, one of the things that I did, and, you know, you'll laugh, and my friends, if they listen to this, will really laugh because it's a corny song, but I had a theme song. And I think I remember hearing, you know, laughing about it. There was an Ally McBeal show where she had a theme song that would run through her head. But I chose a theme song that every time I sort of questioned myself, I would stick this in my Walkman. This was way before iPods, so you know, I had this big Walkman, and I don't know if you remember the song Kenny Loggins, "This Is It."
Mm-hmm.
But one of the lines from there, it says, "No one can tell you what the future holds. You make the choice of how it goes." And I would play that to myself over and over and over again when I got down. So there were those kinds of things that helped me, that helped me kind of hoist myself up when I was, you know, when I would falter a little bit. But I also had a pretty concrete plan. You know, I needed to know what I could bring in from a financial perspective. Could I make it work? before I took the leap, you know, I made sure that I wasn't in debt. I paid off everything that I could. I had a car that I made sure was paid off, so I didn't have a car note. You know, I made sure that I could afford, you know, I dropped my insurance way down, but I had, you know, a very bare-bones minimum health insurance plan so that I, you know, God forbid anything happened to me, I could take care of me or my son. So those were some of the real concrete, you know, items that I took with me. I made a budget. You know, it was more about as I moved forward, each step I took, I had to say, okay, what do I need to have with me today? Do I have enough money? Do I have enough, you know, do I have enough support around me from friends? You know, if I needed a babysitter, I had some friends that would kick in some help and help me babysit. And, you know, and what do I need for my next step going forward? And the other thing that I did that was really helpful is that I set clear intentions. I wrote myself a letter and to be opened a year later. And I did it once in the beginning of the process. And I made clear intentions about what I wanted. For example, you know, at this point next year, both personally and, you know, on my career track, these are the things that I will have accomplished. And I sealed it. And then at the very end, actually, in my acupuncture program, they took that exercise and repeated it. And so they had us write, what will my practice look like after my first year? How much money will I make? Where will I be practicing? And so they had you really vision what you wanted, and then they mailed it to you at the end of that year. And what was really fascinating to me was that I had accomplished and exceeded probably everything that I had put in that letter. The only joke, and everybody laughs about it, is that I really wanted to work with a professional sports team. And at the time, I was a diehard, I'm a New York girl, so I was a diehard New York Giants fan. And the only folks that I didn't want to work for was the Washington Redskins. And that's who I ended up working with. So I put in there, not the Washington Redskins. And so, you know, you have to be careful about, and I'm so thrilled. And I love the Redskins, and they're great. But it's funny how when you really set very, very clear intentions, what shows up in the world.
You know, I just love this about you, Amy, because you're very pragmatic, right? So when you were talking about the people that you attract as far as clients and the people that you serve in being a wolf in sheepskin, I think that's how you called yourself.
Yeah, wolf in sheep clothing, yeah.
Yeah, sheep clothing, right? So it's like people can come to you because they're like, oh, she understands me. She's not one of those woo-woo unicorns and, you know, magic type of people. So you get them in the door and then you eventually work with them and they understand another part of themselves, the healing part.
That's exactly right.
And with you, like me as a life coach, I mean, you're very pragmatic. And I'm, you know, a lot of times when clients call me up, they'll be like, well, you're not just this rah-rah cheerleader. And I'm like, no, I'm not a rah-rah cheerleader. If you want that, you have to go someplace else. But I'm really pragmatic because there's that part of me. And then there's the other part about the dreaming and then making things happen and getting to success. So there's those tools that I bring in. But when you talk about just those specific things, right, about, you know, making sure you don't have debt, your health insurance, that's a huge issue for self-employed people.
Well, that's right.
And you know, the fact, again, and I want to reiterate this to listeners, that when you took the leap, you were a single parent with a child. And it wasn't that you could, you know, write on your husband's income or had this, you know, you were this wealthy person that you can go and do this. Like you said, you lived in an apartment in not a very good neighborhood to make this transition. There were a lot of personal sacrifices. But really knowing like your budget, I mean, I talk a lot with my clients about what's your squeak by number. What's the number that you need to get you, you know, through the year? So you don't necessarily have to replace that six-figure salary, right? You need to go, okay, what do we need to do to live so that I can go and pursue this? So you've got that pragmatic stuff, but then you come in with these letters. And this is where sometimes, whether it's working with clients or, and I've had a lot of times guests that talk about this, like writing things down. And the questions that clients sometimes have is, well, how can just writing it down make it happen? Can you say more about that?
Well, to be honest, I don't know how it happens, but I know that it does. And if you ask folks that sort of, you know, and I've read, you know, The Secret and, you know, the whole idea of, you know, setting your goals and setting your attention. And to be honest, I'm pretty ignorant about kind of the hows and whys of, you know, quantum physics and all of that. But I have just learned over the years, and I'm 44 now, I have learned over the years that when I say, this is where I'm going, and I put the blinders on, you know, in a healthy way, and say, this is my path, this is my intention, and set a very clear intention, that it manifests. And truthfully, you know, I don't know how it works, but I know that it does. So I encourage my patients, when they are in the process of changing their lives in a particular way, I always say, write it down. You know, even it can be something as small as, you know, I see, you know, folks that are struggling to find a life partner. And I say, well, what do you want in a life partner? And they say, well, you know, and they get these very lofty ideas. You know, I want someone who's truthful and honest. I say, well, what color hair do they have? And at first they look at me funny. I say, no, you really have to be that specific. You have to get to next Tuesday at 4 o'clock p.m., I will go here. Because it's not only kind of putting it out in the universe, but it's organizing your own brain to move in that direction.
No, that's so true. And I love when a pragmatic person starts talking about the universe and manifesting.
Well... you know, but it's true, and I think that there are a lot of pragmatic folks out there that recognize that the universe manifests. We just don't have necessarily less woo-woo language about it, and I wish there was a better way to say it. But if it makes you comfortable to say, this helps me put my brain in that direction, then that's great. It's whatever works.
Well, and I liken to it, so like with some clients, I'll talk about... like when I first had a child, I mean, I was not interested in babies. And then I had my daughter 10 years ago, and I was just so fascinated with her and in love with her. And I remember telling my husband, I was like, oh my gosh, there's something happening. Everybody's having babies right now, because all I did was see babies, you know. And so it's when people, you know, maybe want more of the science. I mean, that's just an example that I use, like what you focus on expands. Because I was so focused on her being a baby and just thinking it was the coolest thing, I saw tons of babies where I'd never seen babies before, you know. And right now, I don't really see babies. My daughter's 10, you know. I'm not as interested in babies, so my focus is on a different area now. And or it's like the book or the movie, you know, that just keeps showing up, right? You just kind of focus on it, and then you just see it everywhere.
That's exactly right.
And so sometimes, like, just to keep it simple and maybe less woo-woo for clients, is that I use that as an example. You know, don't really know how it works, but this is, I mean, we've experienced this. This is common stuff that we've all experienced.
Well, that's right. And you know, when it's, the whole camera lens is much larger than we can see. And it's the question, as you said, of focusing. And when something comes into your focus, then you start to look around and see all the other things that sort of relate to what your focus is at this particular moment. And, you know, it helps no matter what to put it down on paper, if nothing else, that you get to kind of have a way of really succinctly identifying what you want. Even if you never look at it again, you've already said, I want X, and you've got it written, you know, it's been written down on paper.
This is Corinne Motokaitis, and you are listening to How She Really Does It. My guest today is Amy Lewis, and she's from Experience Health and Wellness in Washington, D.C., and sharing with us about her taking the leap into entrepreneurship. And so, Amy, when you were talking about writing things down, I had an idea about that, but now I can't remember. Oh, I know what it is. It has to do with when you're writing things down, and you had talked about being more specific, you know, knowing the color of the person's hair, for instance, if it's like you're trying to figure out who do you want to be in a relationship with. And I mean, sometimes don't you think like when people write things down or have goals, it's kind of like the buzz. It's like the sound bites, right? It's the Hollywood sound bites. It's overnight success. And in those things, there's not a belief in it. Isn't when you write down the goals, there needs to be like what you really believe.
Well, I do think that there's a question of what you really believe. I think that the first thing that you have to do is identify what are your core values. I mean, for me, you know, and I've thought about this for a long time, but I wasn't in integrity with myself when I was working in an environment where it didn't exist in my everyday life. For example, you know, the four things, passion, truth, love, and hope. Those are the four things that I must have in order for me to feel like I'm following my path. And that happens in my personal life. That happens in my professional life. So, you know, some of my patients will tell you that, you know, I lovingly kick them in the pants, because sometimes telling someone that, you know, that's not working is what most people are afraid to do, particularly if it's someone who, you know, holds a pretty powerful position in this town.
Mm-hmm.
But if I look at them and I know that in order for me to be helpful in this situation is I have to bring truth, and I have to bring it in a loving way.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to give them hope. Those are my personal tenets that I follow. I think if people can come up with words, tenets that really mean something to them. You know, for example, truth might not be important to someone else. It doesn't mean that it's not important. It just might not be. They might be in politics, and they might be able to look at something, you know, the means justify the end, or the end justifies the means, you know, those kinds of things. But whatever your personal tenets are, you have to have those in place. And then you can say, okay, given that these are the things that are really important to me, how do I take the next step very tangibly? So when I was making the decision to go to acupuncture school, I knew that I had to be passionate about it. So I did the research. I talked to acupuncturists. And, you know, one of the things that I did when talking to acupuncturists is I made sure that, you know, I talked to folks that came from the woo-woo side and folks that were really, you know, very pragmatic, let's fix your knee pain, and, you know, someone who said, well, you know, let's redesign the universe. And so I had a sense of the broad spectrum of what was happening in the acupuncture world. The next thing I did was to make sure that, you know, again, you know, that there was honesty there. What did being an acupuncturist mean to me? What was I going to be able to do with my acupuncture? Not just, oh, I'm going to be an acupuncturist and I'm going to help people with knee pain, or, you know, help people with fertility issues. What was my goal? And could I apply acupuncture to my own personal passion, truth, love, and hope? And the answer for me was yes. So I think you've got to start with what's really your, you know, your mission statement, if you will, but what's mm-hmm. really important to you. And rather than the Hollywood instant success, I'm going to be a rich and famous actress, mm-hmm. Which we can all get lofty when it's not grounded. But it's not grounded in what's important for us and our journey.
I just saw this great TED Talk yesterday, and I'm going to send it out to all my newsletter subscribers. But it's, I can't remember his name, is Simon Sinek. And one of my coaching buddies, Jennifer Voss, had shown that to me. But it's a great, and he talks about the why, getting to the why. And when we understand the why of what it is that we're doing, whether it's in a company, an institution, being an entrepreneur, because it's not the how or the what, but it's the why. And then that is like the key message, understanding the why. Why are we doing this? And he talked about leadership and whether it was Apple. Why do we buy Apple products? You know, it's not that, yeah, they're a computer maker, but why? I mean, they have cutting edge stuff that we like, right? That is easy to use. He talked about Dr. Martin Luther King. It wasn't that Martin Luther King said, I have a plan and here are my 12 steps. He said, I have a dream.
That's
and he
right.
talked about his dream, and other people, it resonated inside and they helped him. They jumped on it, not because they were being paid to, but because it resonated with them.
That's right.
And that, when you're talking about that, when you're talking about your thing, it sounds like you got really clear on the why it is. You knew you wanted to do acupuncture and help people, but why? And when you get clear on that, that sounds like it's like you're growing from the inside out.
That's right. That's right. We have, you know, I have another patient who really wants to be a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And she has no idea why.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the, you know, goals that we're working on is, so what is it about singing? could you do it if you weren't famous? And it may be at the end of the day, this young woman just really wants to be famous and doesn't really want to be a singer. We don't know. But then you have to say, okay, I really want to be famous. Now, I'm not judging on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that get clear.
Mm-hmm.
If fame is what you want, and there's a, then why? Why do you want to be famous?
Mm-hmm.
And then we can talk about, you know, is this a healthy expression? Is this a logical, you know, next step in your journey? But when you're not clear, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get clear, you know, no matter what, you'll have a sense of why you're taking, as you said, why you're taking the steps you're taking. And then all of the superfluous things have a tendency to fall away because they don't really fit that why plan.
So, Amy, it sounds like your patients get more than needles stuck inside their bodies. You sound like a life coach over there.
Well, I believe that acupuncture is life coaching,
mm-hmm.
and I think that the needles, you know, it's both. Because, you know, my job, if what I set out to do is to help bring people to their real truth, their own integrity, so that they can take that back to their families, they can take that back to their jobs, they can take that back to wherever they go in the world and be a healing presence for the next person, be an example of health for the next person. And that is really mind, body, and spirit. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, when someone comes and they are speaking about, if they're speaking about physical pain and they have the ability to heal from physical pain, that's great. If they're speaking about emotional pain, that makes it all the better when they heal from that as well.
So I have a question for you. Did you ever have any limiting beliefs about being an acupuncturist and being a healer, but not going to medical school and doing all the, you know, the many, many years of training, education and training?
When I first thought about going into medicine, there was an opportunity to have family members. There was an opportunity to kind of look at emergency medicine. You know, everybody was kind of saying, well, if you're going into medicine, why are you going into acupuncture? And I chose acupuncture, again, because it followed my personal truth,
mm-hmm.
that I really wanted to get people to have a mind, body, and spirit health.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really do that in Western medicine. Now, having said that, many, many folks come to me with issues. We deal with, you know, cancer care issues. We deal with fertility issues. We deal with, you know, anything from migraines to children with ADHD. I treat professional athletes, you know, on the field and off the field. So, you know, I see the scope of everybody that might go to Western medicine for something. But I think the folks that come into my office have either gone the Western medicine route and are looking for something different, and I certainly show up as something different,
mm-hmm.
or they come because, unfortunately, they've had a bad experience in Western medicine. No, it's not an either-or conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Western medicine is phenomenal. They have done, you know, you can't get any better than our Western medical model for acute and emergency medicine. If your arm falls off, if you're having a heart attack, run to the emergency room. For chronic care and for wellness and for mind, body, spirit, I don't think they've done a good job at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where acupuncture, Chinese medicine, complementary medicine as a whole comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I am also, and made it part of my job, to be very well-versed in biomedicine. Part of my degree and my national board certification requires that I have passed the boards in biomedicine, in
mm-hmm.
Western medicine. So I have to be knowledgeable because people come with all kinds of things, and I have to know at least a little bit about most things
mm-hmm.
in order to be able to kind of transfer the paradigm from Western medicine to Eastern medicine.
Okay. This is Corinne Motokaitis, and Amy Lewis of Experience Health and Wellness in Washington, D.C. is here with us discussing her leap into entrepreneurship 10 years ago. And so, Amy, you talked about what you did to make the transition. What did you do? What were the steps that you took to start your business once you went through your training?
That's a good question. One of the great things about where I went, I was at the Thai Sophia Institute in Maryland, and one of the best pieces of this particular school is that they required that while you were in your residency, you built your own practice. You generated your own patients, a certain number of them, and you saw those patients X number of times. And so they, more than most acupuncture schools, understand the need to get people out the door, up and running as quickly as possible. Now, I've always, because I was a fundraiser, you know, and I don't know if you know anything about fundraising, but you have to kind of be comfortable with people and be willing to put yourself out there. And, you know, I did silly things. We would go to happy hours at some of the bars in downtown D.C., and we would sit at the bar and we would tell somebody what we did. I would go with one of my fellow residents, and we would tell some, and they would be fascinated. And by the end of the night, we'd have a line a mile long, mostly, you know, mostly men, interestingly enough, but a line a mile long for people that wanted us to read their pulses and tell them what we thought was wrong with them. And so we started to generate interest that way. And again, you know, it's very pragmatic. It has nothing to do with woo-woo, but the people that were most unhealthy were probably the people that were, you know, getting drunk at Friday night at the happy hour. So we figured that was a really good way to start. And we got a lot of patients that way. I got a lot of patients that way. And they would come in, and then they would tell two friends, and they would tell two friends, and, you know, see senators and you know, Congress and doctors and lawyers, and, you know, and it just grew from there.
So happy hours was one of your marketing techniques.
Hours was one of my marketing techniques.
And I can honestly say I've never heard of that.
Well, you have to think about it. Again, you know, they're in the healing community. It happens to be pretty small. And, you know, if we go to yoga studios, everybody knows about acupuncture.
Uh-huh.
But the folks that are sitting at, you know, one of the hot spots in downtown D.C. probably don't.
Uh-huh.
And so inviting, you know, if my job is to be a wolf in sheep's clothing, I have to go where fellow wolves are.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, find them and bring them in.
So you would just sit down and just start talking to people, and then the crowd
would
just come.
Talking to the person next to me. And invariably they'd say, what do you do? I'd say, well, funny you ask. I'm an acupuncturist. And they'd say, really? How does that, does it really work? And I'd say, well, take your watch off and let me feel your pulses. I'll tell you something about you. And they would. And then they'd call their next friend, come on over. You're not going to believe this. She knew that I had X and Y and Z. And so it would just follow suit. And the next thing you know, we really would have a line.
Wow, that is great. I'm going to remember that story.
when you're a life coach, you sit down and they ask you what you do. And then they ask you, well, what is a life coach? And the next thing you know, you're in business.
Wow. So what are some other marketing steps that you took?
Well, I also, because I was involved in personal training, and I worked as a personal trainer part-time while I was in school, people that were, you know, they would get hurt or injured while they were working out, and I would say, well, acupuncture can really help you with that. So I was in an environment where it might not be as readily available. People might not be as familiar with acupuncture as they might in something that's more alternative or complementary. But I would talk to anybody that wanted to listen. And I had, you know, what was also very helpful is that I had what I called a cocktail party or an elevator soundbite,
mm-hmm.
where you left people wanting to know more, and you gave them about 3 or 4 really, you know, hot sentences about what you did for a living. And, you know, that's why they could come back and say, well, tell me more about that. You know, sometimes, particularly when we're new, we have a tendency to over-talk.
Mm-hmm.
And we go into details about, you know, how the NIH has found this study to be helpful, or, you know, did you know that X percentage of people that use acupuncture? In the beginning, nobody really wants to know that. They want to know that you might be able to help their knee pain. So if someone said, can acupuncture help knee pain? Well, yes. Yes, it can. And then I'd wait to hear them say one more thing. And then they'd ask one more thing. Well, how does it help? Well, you know, you either have a block in a particular energy channel or, you know, you have this or that, and we'd begin to have a conversation. But I'd allow them to lead the conversation rather than really talk at them.
That is a good one. Allow them to lead the conversation. That is a very good one. And so do you ever worry about the economy?
I don't. And I know that sounds really silly because a lot of people are really worried about the economy. And, you know, particularly my business has grown significantly in the time that we were supposed to, according to all economic factors, you know, have shrunk.
Uh-huh.
And I'm continuing to grow and grow at a really healthy rate. As a matter of fact, 2 weeks ago, I opened an expanded office in Washington and hired an associate and a massage therapist and another full-time assistant. And so we are, you know, we are continuing to grow. And I think it's because I don't, you know, I don't allow for any other possibility. And the folks that I hear that allow for other possibilities, well, okay, so I'm setting my intention to make, you know, $100,000 this year or $200,000 this year. But what if I don't? And I, maybe stubbornly so, I never ask the what if I don't. Because the truth of the matter is that if the what if I don't actually happens, it'll show up and there's nothing I can do about it. But if I'm going to set my intention and move my energy in a particular direction, I'm just going to focus in the direction I want it to go.
Well, and look what happened when you said you didn't want to work with the Washington Redskins.
Right. Case in point. Case in point. But I have to say, you know, I love them now, and uh-huh. They're my favorite team. So, you know, you see what happens when you put it out there.
Mm-hmm. So you focus on what you want instead of what you don't want.
Focus on what you want. There's an old Chinese, and I know I'm going to butcher it, but there's this old Chinese, you know, saying where a little boy goes to his grandfather, and he has two dogs, a really mean dog and a really wonderful dog, but they're very poor, and he doesn't have enough money for the food to feed both of them. And he says, "Grandfather, what should I do?" And the grandfather looks at him, and he says, "Feed the dog you want to live." And the idea is, if you have a really nasty dog, are you going to feed that one if you only have enough food for one dog? Or are you going to feed the dog that you love?
Oh, gosh. We so often feed the nasty dog.
Of course, all the time. It's easier for us to feed the nasty dog.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes much more challenging to feed the dog we love. But which serves us in the end? You know, it's all, you know, in some weird way, it's all of it is made up. You know, there's a physical fact. The fact is we have two dogs. That's physical fact. The other physical fact is we don't have enough food to feed both dogs. But the story we tell about it is what is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
If I say, I love this dog and I want to feed this dog, and I put my intention in that direction, that creates a tremendous amount of power. Because it's all made up. I can make up the story of that I should be feeding the dog that's mean. But it's still made up. We have physical facts, and then we have the stories we tell. I could tell the story. The physical fact is the economy has taken a turn downward, right? Even
mm-hmm.
though it's expanding again. But at the time that I was telling it, the physical fact was the economy had fallen. My story about it is that has something outside me. I, in my own control and my own power, can manifest abundance. And that's the story I told. The facts are the facts. The story we tell about them is what's powerful.
And how do you stay out of fear?
I indulge fear in one space. My son is 16 years old, and I am a neurotic Jewish mama when it comes to his safety.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the one place that I can't really let go of fear.
Mm-hmm.
But in every other area of my life, I'm pretty much fearless because I set my intention in that way. I just say this is the way it is, and there's no other possibility. And it sounds so simple. It sounds too simple to actually make it useful.
Mm-hmm.
But I always say to people, try it for a day. See what you notice. What shows up in your body when you say, there is only this option today? And then if it serves you, try it again tomorrow. And every time you hear that little voice, stop it. Actually, you can say out loud to yourself, stop it. And redirect your energy in back to the intention that you want. Try it for a day. If it works for a day, try it for another day. You don't have anything to lose. And if you try it for enough days, it becomes a habit. I can't remember what they say. It takes some number of days before, you know, something becomes permanent, a habit becomes permanent.
Yeah, it's like 23 to 30 days.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But what if, you know, oh my goodness, what if you tried that for 23 days?
Mm-hmm. This is Karen Motokaitis, and I'm wrapping up my conversation with Amy Lewis, an acupuncturist, and her businesses of Experience Health and Wellness in Washington, D.C. And Amy, so what are a couple takeaways that our listeners can do if they choose to make this leap into entrepreneurship?
Well, I think, you know, the first one is to trust yourself and to trust that you know better than anyone else around you what the right path is for you. So then, along with that, you have to set your clear intentions. You know, and even more than that, when you set your clear intentions, don't let the naysayers in. You know, just shut them down. You know, put your fingers in your ear and say, I can't hear you, I can't hear you. And I think that's really important, is that, you know, once you have set your path, move in that direction. But I also think, you know, from a more pragmatic standpoint, find someone who's doing something you want to do and talk to them. And I think that we make the mistake sometimes of finding the king or queen of the industry, and we want to talk to them. And if they won't have time for us or don't have time for us, you know, we feel like we failed in our, you know, quest to find a mentor. But I've found that, you know, maybe the person that's just a bit ahead mm-hmm. of you on the path has more of an immediate memory of what worked for them and probably is going to be more helpful to you in the long run. I don't remember as much about what happened 10 years ago as I do what happened 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for someone who's struggling to be, you know, I had someone reach out to me who wanted to be a massage therapist, and they had seen the USA Today article, and they wanted to know, you know, some of the similar questions that you had asked, and they had... they said, well, how do you do it? And I say, well, you know, I don't remember so many of the specifics, but do you know someone who is a massage therapist? Can you find them who's just maybe entered the field a year ago and see what they did to get there?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that make the person that you're looking for as a mentor someone that's closer in their journey to you.
I think that's a great one, too, because sometimes, especially if you go after the rock star, right, it can still trigger a lot of your limiting beliefs, because you can say, oh, well, they're a rock star.
That's
versus
exactly
somebody
right.
who's maybe one or two rungs above you on the ladder. It's like, oh, well, if they can do it, it opens up the possibilities more. And
Much more.
It creates
right.
that self-doubt that you may have, those limiting beliefs. It's like, oh, it won't trigger it as quite as much. And so now 10 years later, and I know the answer, or I feel like I know the answer. Was it worth it to make the leap?
Oh, my goodness. There is not a moment that goes by. I said to a patient, I'm working today, and I said to a patient at 8:30 this morning who's kind of struggling with some of these issues, I said, well, if you had $50 million, would you be doing what you're doing today? And he said, absolutely not. I said, well, you know, if I had $50 million, I'd still be sitting in this chair at 8:30 this morning.
Wow. Wow. So walked away from so-called security, right, working for an
mm-hmm.
institution. You're 44. And do you feel like you're kind of on your path and you're just going to take it one day at a time?
Without question. Without question. This is the path that I was, you know, I got sidetracked, but all the experiences led to this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is absolutely the right place for me, the right place for my family, my child. And for hopefully the folks that I'm helping.
Mm-hmm. And don't you also have more strength and freedom knowing that you could do this?
Without question. Without question. You know, I've got this quote that sort of helps me. I don't know if you're familiar with Patrick Overton's quote that says, when we come to the edge of all that we've known and must take a step into the darkness, we must believe one of two things. Either we'll find something firm to stand on or we'll be taught to fly.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm ready to learn how to fly. It's scary, though. It is scary.
Very scary and incredibly exciting.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for being a guest today and rearranging your schedules and your patience so that you can be with us. I really appreciate
problem.
It. No
problem. I'm thrilled. Thank you so much for having me, Corinne.
It's been a pleasure. This is Corinne Motokaitis, and our guest today was Amy Lewis, and she was from Experience Health and Wellness in Washington, D.C. Thanks for listening to How She Really Does It at KDRT LP 95.7 FM.